You know, if we could simply learn to have faith and confidence in what other people have discovered about life, in 3 or 4 generations, we could really overcome many of the serious problems that humans face. But that would take faith in the word of someone else. And we're not apt, usually, to give much credence to what others have said. There seems to be an attitude in most of us that has to do with finding out for ourselves just how bad something will hurt or just how serious a particular thing may be. So we're always wanting to, quote, experiment or find out for ourselves. And in doing that, we just recreate grief for ourselves. We suffer the same circumstances, the same grief, the same problems that we had others tell us about. As children, we might have heard grandmother or grandfather say that certain things had been great problems to them. And yet, the children find out for themselves. And I think this is why we look at the book of Ecclesiastes, and all of us can say this is fantastic information. It really does expose the truth of life as it really is, and we all understand that. And yet we find ourselves oftentimes caught up in the same kind of futile chase of chasing material things, hoping that in these things we'd find some deep satisfaction. In verse 3 of chapter 1, what profit, that is, what's left over, what does a man have left over after all of his labors which he taketh under the sun? So these things that we've studied are Solomon's and other men's attempts finding an answer to this question. And we've seen how they approached it and the things that they did. And this afternoon we want to look at another procedure. It's really an attempt to discover truth. And so we might say that this evening's message might belong more to the field of philosophy than it does theology. But of course that isn't true. Philosophy, in its true sense, is a search for truth, and theology is the truth about God. So philosophy, if it follows its own professed pathway, would lead to a truth about God. But in verse 12, the writer states, I turn myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Now, he mentions that he gave himself after this experiment with building and his experiment with accumulating, so that, in his own words, he became great. And he turns more to a philosophic search. He said, I turn myself to behold wisdom. That's the one side of the issue. And on the other side of the issue was madness and folly. These were the two things that are mentioned in verse 2 of the same chapter. And he said, I'm in a perfect position to pursue truth from this angle, because no man is going to be in a greater position than I am. Because Solomon realized that God had granted him great wisdom, and he realized that being extremely wealthy and being a king, he could also pursue madness and folly. So he's really saying, I'm in the best position of any human to find out the truth about life and where the profitable pursuits of life really lie. And in stating this, he gave the perfect description of what we term in philosophy as dialect. That is, finding truth through the procedure of dialect or discussion. Karl Marx and Engels were dialectical, materialistic philosophers. In the dialectical part, they said truth can be arrived at by discussion, and in the material part of their description of their philosophy, it meant without God. And so really, there's something to dialectical materialism here in these statements or pursuits that Solomon says he's going to involve himself in as a pursuit for truth. Now, dialectical materialism or dialogue in order to find truth is not new. The philosophers of ancient times oftentimes used this as a way to find truth. In the Middle Ages, it was refined to the point of a thesis, that is a statement, and then an antithesis or antithesis, which was the very opposite. So they would have one person take a thesis, which was a fact or a truth or a supposition. Another person would take the very opposite of that, or the antithesis, and they would discuss it and come to a synthesis. And that synthesis was supposed to be the truth. Well, Solomon here is saying, I turn myself to behold wisdom, or to have wisdom, and madness and folly. These were the two things that he involved himself in. And these wisdom, we can call that the thesis, and madness and folly, we can call that the antithesis. And then whatever conclusion he's supposed to come to would lie somewhere in the middle as the synthesis or the truth. However, that didn't happen with Solomon, because the truth wasn't between, somewhere between wisdom and madness and folly. The truth was that wisdom was better than folly. That's the truth that he said, I finally come to grasp. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? In other words, no one else can really imitate the experiment that I would involve myself in. In verse 13, he gives the conclusion of this pursuit of truth. Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. He said, when I gave myself to madness and folly, and also when I looked at these from the viewpoint of wisdom, wisdom is so much better than madness and folly. It's like the difference between daylight and dark. The wise man's eyes are in his head. That is, he uses them to see with. But the fool walks in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. After Solomon looked at the wise man, then he looked at the person who gave himself to madness and folly. He said wisdom, from the viewpoint of living your life, is a lot better than madness and folly. It's the difference in daylight and dark. But he said, I also noticed that the person who gives himself to wisdom and the person who gives himself to madness and folly, that they all have the very same thing happen to them. And what is this same thing that happens to the wise man or to the fool? Well, it's death. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. Solomon said, when I looked at the wise man, he goes to the grave. And I looked at the fool, and he goes to the grave. And he said, what difference is there then if we all wind up at the same place? If I live a life based on wisdom, and this man lives a life based on foolishness, and then we all go to the same cemetery and we're all buried in the grave in similar graves, then why live a life based on wisdom? Because you all end up at the same place. And that's where the consideration of under the sun has to be refreshed in our minds. Remember, we're looking at this from the viewpoint of a man looking at life with his natural eyes without benefit of any revelation from God. You know, if we didn't have the Bible, this is the way we'd see life. If we didn't have the Bible, this is the way all of us would see life. We'd see a good man who's honest, who has integrity, and who uses wisdom. And he dies and goes to the cemetery. He fills a grave. And here's a foolish person who pursues madness, who has not a serious thought in his whole life, never does anything except for selfish reasons. And when he dies, he goes to the same cemetery. He fills up a grave. And so we'd look at it and say, what's the difference? Why be honest when you go to the same place that a dishonest man goes to? Well, that is vanity and vexation of the spirit if there is no divine revelation. If there is no God, if there is no life after death, if there is no such thing as judgment, then these things are simply vanity. But there is such a thing as judgment. There is such a thing as meeting our God in judgment. Now here's his conclusion also about the wise man and the foolish man. For there is no remembrance of the wise man, or the wise more than the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. In other words, the wise man isn't going to be remembered, and the fool isn't going to be remembered. They're both forgotten. Perhaps the wise man would like to be remembered for his wisdom, and maybe the fool would like to be remembered for his foolishness, but in truth, no one is remembered very long after death. And you know what this created in the writer? Well, it's a rather common thing when we begin to look at life without benefit of divine revelation. He said in verse 17, I hated life. I hate life. I wish, you know, I hate this whole thing. It's not the same as wishing you were dead, but it's simply saying, I hate, and you can put your personal pronoun in there if you want to, I hate my life. Because it's not going anywhere, and I'm not getting anywhere, and one of these days it's all going to be over. And I won't have accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and I won't have done what I've wanted to do. So life, I just simply hate life. Now, if you talk to many people in every profession, you'll find people who hate life. You'll find people in the professions who've spent years equipping themselves to teach or to do some rather useful activity in life, whatever it might be, and they'll tell you, I spent hours and days and months and years preparing myself, and I hate this. I hate it every morning when I get up, and I'm glad when I'm through the day, and I hate it the next morning. I literally hate life. It's a bummer. There's really nothing to it. And I think one of the reasons that people come to this conclusion is because they followed this same route that Solomon followed. And they saw that, you know, after you've been in the business for a while, and when I say the business, I mean just about any business, and probably the first thing that shocks you if you get into any of the public system, you find out, and this is not always true, but it is true most of the time, that the positions that open up in business, in schools, or wherever you may be, they usually go to the person who's ingratiated themselves most to the boss or to the person in charge. The idea that all of us have had, that if you really qualify yourself and you're honest and straightforward and you do what's right, then the promotions will come to you in life, because everyone in an upper position, they're always looking for good, honest men and good, hard-working people who will help them do their task well. Now, that's what we've been taught. That's what we've said. And the problem with it is it isn't true. And we've said it over and over again, it's more who you know than what you know, and that's a fact. And that's frustrating, isn't it? Frustrating to you. Frustrating in your life's work, whether it's whatever it may be, that many times the most insincere, the most incompetent people, the ones who party the most, and if you don't party, you just don't get your promotions. And that's part of the price that you pay for being a Christian. Well, this man said, when I realized that a wise man dies and his body rots, a fool dies and his body rots, a wise man dies, he's in the cemetery, a fool dies, he's in the cemetery. And a few days after the funeral, nobody remembers the wise man. A few days after the funeral, nobody remembers the foolish man. Solomon said, I hate life. It's just one mistake after another. It's just one unsolvable problem after another. And there's no profit in it. Nobody has anything left over when it's all over with. When it's the bottom line is, you can't get anywhere. And so in this frustrated attitude, he said, I hate life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me. Now, here's a man who dreaded getting up every morning. It got to be a burden to him. He did not relish, he did not look forward to the time that the alarm clock went off and he could get up. Here was a new day of opportunity. Here was a new day of service. He said, I hate life, and it is a grievous thing for me to try to live life under the sun. Yes, he said, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. You can't take it with you. That's what we've always been told, and that's what this verse of Scripture is saying. And Solomon is saying, after I found out that everything ends up pretty well the same for everybody under the sun, then he said, I didn't care anything about work. I didn't care anything about accumulating anything, because I know that after I die, someone is going to get what I've labored to put together. And his grief was that some fool would get it. Verse 19, and who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. Now notice, I hated life. I hated all my labor. And I went about to cause my heart to despair. Now this man has come to some conclusions that has not brought him a great deal of happiness. Verse 21, for there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. In other words, he said, I know a wise man who labored, and he was a man of integrity and wisdom and equity, and yet when he died, he left it to someone who was not of this character. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart, wherein he hath labored, notice, under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. He said, when you consider life from this viewpoint, you don't look past the grave because you don't have divine revelation. When you lie down at night and you begin to think about life as it looks and life as it really is, he said, you become disturbed and restless and you don't sleep well because you're vexed and frustrated by the way things happen, by the inequity of life, by the unfair things that happen in life. It's sort of like we studied this morning in the book of James. You've got to look past life as it is to life as it will be under the direction of God's Son. And James said, take the prophets for an example, my brethren, of patience. And he signifies that all of this frustration about what has occurred in life will be ended with the coming of Jesus Christ. And I really believe that in the 1,000 years of the reign of Christ as King upon this earth, that then there's going to be a reward of the wise and a reward of that which is built upon wisdom. The foolishness and the madness will be seen as it really is, and that which is truth and righteousness will be exalted. Until then, we live and labor in a very imperfect circumstance, where, according to the Peter principle, people are going to rise to their highest level of incompetence. And that's frustrating, it's vexing, and yet it many times is true. So don't be poisoned by looking at life as you see it through the eyes of a human, without divine light, divine revelation. Because if there's not anything to this life except what you and I can see, then you'll not get any heart rest at night, and you will be frustrated. You'll come to hate life, and you'll come to despise the hours, the daylight hours, that call you out into the world to work. What is work? Well, it's a means of getting so we can live for God. It's a means of having what we need so we can serve God. It's not an end within itself. It's simply a means whereby we can have food and clothing and the things that are necessary to this life, not so we can just enjoy life, because life is not that enjoyable, but it's there so we can be servants of God. And then the real life that we want to live is the life that lies in the future. And that's when right will be exalted. Until then, our musicians will come. And we'll stand and sing a verse of our invitation hymn. And as we do, if you're here this afternoon and you've not trusted in Christ, it'll be a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful time for you to come and give yourself to the Lord.